troubles staying focused this week. We've had a lot going on. Not an excuse, but I hope that this came together in a way that you guys will understand, and it's not just a big bunch of information that is a little scattered. So please forgive me as we go along. I wanted to start off talking about what's in a name. My maternal grandfather, his last name was Wenger. His father was from Switzerland. And the Wenger name in Switzerland is pretty well known because they were one of two companies that made the Swiss Army knife. In 1909, they were one of the companies that came on. The Swiss Army had hired them to make the Swiss Army knife. And my grandfather, like his great-grandfather or great-great-grandfather, had started the company in the 1800s. So this is something that was synonymous with our family and what we were a part of. I wanted to show you one of their knives. And this is a collector's item, but it's in the Guinness Book of World Records. It is the largest largest Swiss Army knife, and you can see our family name right there on the end, Wenger. And if you're interested in buying one, they're about $5,000 right now. The Wenger Company is no longer in business. They sold out in 2005 to a company, the other company that made the Swiss Army knife, which was Victorinox. And interesting note, last night I cut my finger and it actually was with a Victorinox, so they got us twice. But why I'm talking about names, please turn to me to Joshua 10. I'm going to be reading Joshua 10, 1 through 4. Now it came to pass when Adonai Zedek, king of Jerusalem, heard how Joshua had taken Ai and had utterly destroyed it, as he had done to Jericho and its king, so he had done to Ai and its king, and how the inhabitants of Gibeon had made peace with Israel and were among them, that they feared greatly, because Gibeon was a great city, like one of the royal cities, and because it was greater than Ai and all its men were mighty, therefore Adonai Zedek, king of Jerusalem, sent to Hoham, king of Hebron, Piram, king of Jarmuth, Japhia, king of Lachish, and Debir, king of Eglon, saying, "Come up to me and help me, that we may attack Gibeon, for it has made peace with Joshua and with the children of Israel." So right away, I don't know if anyone else caught this, I caught Adonai Zedek. And I said, "Lord, what's this guy's name and how is it equivalent?" Well, first I wanted to remind us where he was the king of. He's the king of Jerusalem, which means foundation or fountain of peace. And that's what this name meant. It meant place of peace. And here's the king coming because he's afraid. He gathers up armies, and he comes from a place of peace. His name, Adonai Tzedek, it actually means Lord of Righteousness. I think that some of these names had lost their meaning over time. I wanted to read about another man that came from Jerusalem. At the time it was called Salem, which means peace. But we turn to Genesis 14, 18 through 20. Then Melchizedek, king of Salem, brought out bread and wine. He was the priest of God Most High, and he blessed him and said, "Blessed be Abram of God Most High, possessor of heaven and earth, and blessed be God Most High, who has delivered your enemies into your hand." And he gave him a tithe of all. This would have been around a 500-year difference from Melchizedek to Adonai Tzedek. They could have been related. They could have, if that kingdom had stood, he could have been a part of that line. Now, I'm not presumptuous enough to say that that's true for sure, but it could be. And so, I just wonder, did he lose sight of who where his name was and who he was in the line? Now, we do know he is a Canaanite, but he may have lost sight of who God had wanted him to be or his family. I wanted to continue and look at some other names. Because Lord of Righteousness, it doesn't say his name in there. I mean, it could be, he could be talking about anybody. But the next king, his name is Hoham. This one's unique. It means Jehovah impels. It doesn't mean a different God. It means Jehovah, whom Jehovah impels, Hoham. And he was the king of Hebron. And if we remember back in Genesis 13, just before Abram meets Melchizedek, he goes to a place called Hebron, and Hoham is the king of Hebron. And Abram built an altar in Hebron to Jehovah. And also, does anyone else know what else was in Hebron? It was the cave in the field of Machpelah that Abraham ends up buying for the burial for his wife. This is the cave where Isaac and Rebekah and Leah and Rachel.
No, you were right.
I was right the first time. Sorry. Okay. Rebecca. Yes. So the cave where they were built was on the land of this king of Hebron. And his name meant whom Jehovah impels. The other names, I looked them up just because of curiosity. I wanted to know. The Piram means like a wild donkey. And Japhia means shining. But I was interested in the last one. Debir means sanctuary. Because later we'll see that one of the towns that Joshua defeated was Debir, and this, he wasn't the king of Debir, but he was the king of a different place. So many times as I read it, it did confuse me. I was like, wait, I thought Debir was from Eglon, and then it says he beat a Debir. Why? So hopefully we can clear a little bit of that up as we read. Okay, I'm going to continue on through Joshua 10, 5 through 15. And Brandon, can you bring up the map so we can see? Okay, here's a map. And up there in the right-hand corner is Gilgal. That's where the Israelites were camped. And you can see Gibeon. The method I used was my fingers, and I came up with about 17 miles, roughly, from Gilgal to Gibeon. And that will be important here as I read. Therefore, the five kings of the Amorites, the king of Jerusalem, the king of Hebron, the king of Jarmuth, the king of Lachish, and the king of Eglon, gathered together and went up, they and all their armies, and camped before Gibeon, and made war against it. And the men of Gibeon sent to Joshua at the camp of Gilgal, saying, "Do not forsake your servants. Come up to us quickly, save us, and help us. For all the kings of the Amorites who dwell in the mountains have gathered together against us." So Joshua ascended from Gilgal, he and all the people of war with him, and all the mighty men of valor. And Jehovah said to Joshua, "Do not fear them, for I have delivered them into your hand. Not a man of them shall stand before you." And I love this. I love the juxtaposition that we see here with the king of Jerusalem says in verse 2, he feared them greatly. And out of fear comes this war that he is trying to start. And you can see all the other cities were much more southern than Jerusalem. Jerusalem was only about 5 miles away from Gibeon, while the others were about between 10 to 20 miles away. So they all gathered together in Jerusalem to attack Gibeon. And last time I taught about the Gibeonites. Does everyone remember what they did to Joshua and the Israelites? Yeah, they had tricked them. They had dressed up and said that they came from afar off. So now they have agreed to become the Israelite slaves. And they sent for their help. And Joshua straight away gets his men and he heads over without a question to defend those that he has promised to make a part. And Jehovah said to Joshua, "Do not fear, delivered into your hand. Not a man of them shall stand before you." Joshua therefore came upon them suddenly, having marched all night from Gilgal. So Jehovah routed them before Israel and killed them with a great slaughter at Gibeon, chased them along the road that goes to Beth Horon, and struck them down as far as Ezekah and Makeda. And it happened as they fled before Israel and were on the descent of Beth Horon that Jehovah cast down large hailstones from heaven on them as far as Ezekah, and they died. There were more who died from the hailstones than the children of Israel killed with the sword. Then Joshua spoke to Jehovah in the day when Jehovah delivered up the Amorites before the children of Israel, and he said in the sight of Israel, "Sun, stand still over Gibeon, and moon in the valley of Ajalon." So the sun stood still, and the moon stopped, till the people had revenge upon their enemies. Is this not written in the book of Jasher? So the sun stood still in the midst of heaven, and did not hasten to go down for about a whole day. And there has been no day like that before it or after it. Then Jehovah heeded the voice of a man, for Jehovah fought for Israel. Then Joshua returned, and all Israel with him, to the camp at Gilgal. So here we see three different miracles, at least. We see first that there were large hailstones that came down. The hailstones came down and killed more men than the army did. So you have the first heat-seeking missiles, I guess, coming from heaven. Second, we see Joshua ask that the sun and the moon stay still so that they could complete this route And we'll hear more about the destructions of these cities in this one day. I have to admit that this miracle to me is probably one of the hardest miracles to reconcile within myself. I wrestle with it because, I mean, when God talks about Moses crossing the Red Sea, he brought an east wind. That makes sense to me. When Joshua crossed the Jordan, we know that there was probably a landslide at far away, and that would have. So he used natural events or natural things. Even when Yeshua tells the wind to die down, it's amazing that the wind listened, but it's wind. It can die down. The sun and moon can't stop. But it does, and I believe it 100%. But what I'm saying is this miracle is probably the biggest miracle in my mind that I can fathom. It can't be understood, and that's a good thing. We don't need to understand God. But to me, it's beyond loving. He listened to Joshua. He gave him what he wanted, and he even stopped what he had set in motion at the beginning of time. This is no small miracle. This is, in my mind, the largest miracle that can happen. But of course, I'm not God. But in my mind, it's amazing. It's beautiful, and it's a strong message to us of how much he really loves us. But the third one isn't really mentioned in here, but as people, we can understand it. They left at night. They walked 17 miles in some rough terrain. You can see it. It's pretty flat, but at the most part, there's some hills. And then they got there and they fought. No time for rest, no time for drinks or eating. They went right into the battle. And they battled so long that if you think of a day, we probably have 12 to 13 hours of daylight in the spring and summer, maybe 14. So they probably had 28 hours, 30 hours of sunlight. And in that time, they had to travel all that way. I don't know how they stayed awake. I don't know if in shifts they had a cart where some of them slept or what. But so the strength that they had to get through this day was another miracle. And even though it's not said in here, we can see it. We can see all the things that have happened through this day. Now, it says here in 15 that they returned to the camp of Gilgal. But now we're actually going to go back and see what happened to the kings. So this day is actually described three times in this passage. So again, we're going back in time to show what happened. And to be honest, this is where I had a lot of trouble staying aware. I had a lot of trouble with, I'm not good with timeline shifting. I'm very linear path thought process. So this is a little bit of what confused me as I read this week. But these five kings had fled and hidden themselves in a cave at Machpelah. And it was told Joshua, saying, the five kings had been found hidden in the cave of Machpelah. So Joshua said, roll large stones against the mouth of the cave and set men by it to guard them. And do not stay there yourselves, but pursue your enemies and attack their rear guard. So we can see that the war was continuing. They found the kings, they sealed off, and the other story that we just read was still going on. Do not allow them to enter their cities, for Jehovah your God has delivered them into your hand. Then it happened, while Joshua and the children of Israel made an end of slaying them with a very great slaughter till they had finished, that those who escaped entered fortified cities, and all the people returned to the camp to Joshua at Makkedah in peace. No one moved his tongue against any of the children of Israel. Then Joshua said, "Open the mouth of the cave and bring out those five kings to me from the cave." And they did so. And they brought out those five kings to him from the cave: the king of Jerusalem, the king of Hebron, the king of Jarmuth, the king of Lachish, and the king of Eglon. So it was, when they brought out those kings to Joshua, that Joshua called for all the men of Israel and said to the captains of the men of war who went with them, "Come near, put your foot on the necks of these kings." And they drew near and put their feet on their necks. Then Joshua said to them, "Do not be afraid nor be dismayed. Be strong and of good courage, for thus Jehovah will do to all your enemies against whom you fight." And afterward Joshua struck them and killed them and hanged them on the five trees, and they were hanging on the trees until evening. So it was at this time of the going down of the sun that Joshua commanded, and they took them down from the trees, cast them into the cave where they had been hidden, and laid large stones against the cave's mouth, which remain until this day. So again, we see that this happened. What probably happened was they chased all the people to their towns. They got the kings. They slaughtered them. Then they hung them. So now we're going back to what happened with the cities as they went around. So now this is what they would have done after they took care of the kings. On that day, Joshua took Makkedah and struck it and its king with the edge of the sword. He utterly destroyed them, all the people who were in it. He let none remain. He also did to the king of Makkedah as he had done to the king of Jericho. Then Joshua passed from Makkedah and all Israel with him to Libna, and they fought against Libna. And Jehovah also delivered it and its king into the hand of Israel. He struck it and all the people who were in it with the edge of the sword. He let none remain in it. He let none remain in it, but did to its king as he had done to the king of Jericho. Then Joshua passed from Libna and all Israel with him to Lachish, and they encamped against it and fought against it. And Jehovah delivered Lachish into the hand of Israel, who took it on the second day and struck it and all the people who were in it with the edge of the sword, according to all he had done to Libna. Then Horam, king of Gezer, came up to help Lachish, and Joshua struck him and his people until he left him none remaining. From Lachish, Joshua passed to Eglon, and all Israel with him, and they encamped against it and fought against it. They took it on that day and struck it with the edge of the sword. All the people who were in it he utterly destroyed that day, according to all that he had done to Lachish. So Joshua went up from Eglon, and all Israel with him, to Hebron, and they fought against it, and they took it and struck it with the edge of the sword, its king, all its cities, and all the people who were in it. He left none remaining, according to all that he had done to Eglon, but utterly destroyed it, and all the people who were in it. Then Joshua returned, and all Israel with him, to Debir. So here we go. This is not the king, but to the land, which would have meant sanctuary. So that made a lot more sense to me of why this man in this land had the same name. And they fought against it. And he took it and its king and all its cities. They struck them with the edge of the sword and utterly destroyed all the people who were in it. He left none remaining, as he had done to Hebron. So he did to Debir and its king, as he had done also to Libna and its king. So Joshua conquered all the land, the mountain country and the south and the lowland and the wilderness slopes, and all their kings. He left none remaining, but utterly destroyed all that breathed, as Jehovah God of Israel had commanded. And Joshua conquered them from Kadesh Barnea as far as Gaza, and all the country of Goshen, even as far as Gibeon. all these kings in their land Joshua took at one time. Because Jehovah God of Israel fought for Israel, then Joshua returned and all Israel with him to the camp at Gilgal. So you can see that there were many cities taken that day. Jarmuth, Libna, Lachish, Makkedah, Eglon, Debir, Hebron. And it's just, it's amazing how much God had done in this amount of time. And again, they even returned back to Gilgal after this. So not only did they make the trek to Gibeon, they went all around and then ended back up at Gilgal before they rested in their camp. So that was what I wanted to share. I just wanted to remind you that we need to remember who we are, where we came from, and what our past is. It's a very important part of who we are. And yes, we should continue to look forward, but remember those who have come before us, because they may have an important story to tell us.